Good evening. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm Charlie Shields, Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC. My co-host tonight is Chuck Stege. And Chuck is with SFG Wealth Planning Services, Inc., SFG Investment Advisors, Inc., a New York Stock Exchange registered investment advisor. Chuck, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you, Charlie.
We're going to have a great show for you tonight. Our special guests are Scott Race, President, and Stuart Race, CEO of Philadelphia Retirement Alliance, and they're going to be showing you people that are worried about retirement how to get through it okay. So if you're not worried about your retirement, flip it off, but if you are, stick with us. It's going to be a good show. Okay, Chuck, let's get started. I know that one of the things you focus on is these executive stock-based compensation programs. And why don't you talk to us a little bit about what's most commonly granted to the executives involved with that?
Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate it. So certainly we've seen stock options issued for a number of years. We have seen a number of executives now being granted restricted stock units and restricted stock. We're seeing that restricted stock units are really the most widely issued. So you may have somebody that is even an entry-level employee receiving restricted stock units, and so it's not just exclusive to the most senior level folks, which by the way, they do receive restricted stock units. Right. And restricted stock.
And for your viewers and listeners, restricted stock is stock you're not allowed to sell for some period of time. And could you tell us generally what those periods of time that they're locked up would be?
Well, it depends on the company and how they have the vesting schedule set up. The real difference, though, between a restricted stock and a restricted stock unit is the fact that with a restricted stock, the shares are actually issued, but they are essentially kept on reserve by the company. So the company is not actually releasing those to the employee executive until some point when they actually vest.
Okay.
The benefit to the executive is the fact that they not only have voting rights, but they also receive dividends.
Okay.
Restricted stock units, on the other hand, recipient of those can't really vote on those shares until the vesting. Actually, the restrictions are released at the time of vesting, at which point that recipient has the ability to both vote but also receive dividends.
Okay. Is this true of public companies and private companies, or is this generally what you'll see with publicly traded companies?
Well, you will generally see these with publicly traded companies. Private equity firms do issue restricted stock for a whole host of reasons, but restricted stock units are by far the largest number of stock-based compensation, the form of stock-based compensation that are being issued within the public space.
Suppose there's a five-year period before the vesting period, or however you want to describe it. If someone leaves at the end of 3 or 4 years, will they sometimes get a partial vesting, or is it like just a cliff that at the end of the 5 years they get it, and if they leave a day before that, they don't get it?
Great question. So again, it depends on how it's structured. Some companies will issue the restricted stock units. They have to wait 3 years, and then 3 years and a day, they then vest. Other companies will, as you pointed out, require a five-year vesting period, in which case maybe they receive 20% per year, you know, beginning after the first year of service. So it just really depends. Companies will also issue or set up a graduated vesting, in some cases where the vesting occurs every month.
Okay. I noticed in my research that you talked about dividend equivalents also. Now, how does that work as opposed to what you've just described?
Okay. So dividend equivalents are oftentimes issued on restricted stock units. Just a moment ago, I pointed out that restricted stock allows somebody to receive the actual dividends. So what do you do if you are a restricted stock unit recipient? Are you not going to receive dividends? Well, you can in the form of dividend equivalents.
Okay.
And oftentimes the company will hold those dividend equivalents for a period of time, oftentimes until vest, at which point it'll either be paid as cash or they'll be paid as additional shares.
Okay, and how are those taxed? Are they taxed at the time they're received?
They are taxed at the time that they are actually released.
Right.
So normally it's at vesting. Again, dividend equivalents are oftentimes linked to the vesting of the restricted stock units themselves. The dividend equivalents will oftentimes be taxed at the time that they're actually released, and they're subject to FICA and FUTA, Social mm-hmm. Security taxes, but there are some mechanisms that allow an executive to actually defer the ordinary income tax on the dividend equivalents.
Suppose an executive or an employee of a firm is lucky enough to be attached to a rapidly rising stock. Are there any tax strategies they can do to help their taxes as they move along with the stock going up fast and the value increasing?
Well, I just pointed out a couple minutes ago that private equity firms oftentimes will issue restricted stock, at which point, when those restricted stock shares are granted, there's a mechanism called an 83B election that allows somebody to declare and pay taxes on the value at the time of grant. And they do that presumably with an eye towards appreciation of those shares. So what they are essentially doing is they're converting from an ordinary income tax event to a capital gains tax event.
It's a lot of difference in the tax for someone who's in a stock that's going up a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, how's the company shareholder benefit by issuing restricted stock? What's in it for the shareholder?
Well, certainly the viewers of this program are going to be most interested in that.
Right.
I mentioned at the outset that companies have moved away from stock options to things like restricted stock units. Why is that? Well, options put more shares upon exercise in the market.
Diluting the value.
Mm-hmm. So restricted stock units issue fewer actual shares by comparison. So of course shareholders and shareholder groups are very interested in dilution because they want to make sure that when those shares are actually released and issued, that the value of their shares aren't going down just simply by virtue of the fact that now the shares are available in the marketplace.
Okay. As you just alluded to, a lot of our viewers and listeners are interested in the stock market, so why don't you see if you got a few questions for me that'll be apropos to that.
Well, there certainly has been a lot that's been happening. Charlie, we've seen a lot of volatility in the market. Can you comment on whether the increased volatility that you're seeing is going to result in a change of investor behavior?
Well, my quick answer is that it shouldn't. Volatility occurs sometimes when the market has really gone down a lot and people are trying to guess a bottom, or a stock has gone up a lot and people are trying to guess, or stock market goes up for 5 years and they're trying to guess, you know, where is the top, and people sell, and then because people miss the boat, they buy, and it causes tremendous volatility. Without timing this show, I want our viewers and listeners to realize we're not accountants, we're not tax advisors, we're not lawyers, but they should consult their own expert before they make any decisions. But recently in the market, because the market has gone up several years in a row, there's been a lot of volatility. But to me, you set your sights on stocks or indexes or a certain sector of the market that you want, and when the volatility in that market causes it to be at the lower end of a trading range, if you don't have as much of that particular sector of the market, you should buy at that time and not worry about the fact the market is chopping up and down daily.
So a lot of that volatility that we've seen in the market has been brought about by a number of extraneous factors, geopolitical events, uncertainty around interest rates. As we look across the pond to Europe, there's a lot of focus on Greece right now.
Yeah.
Greece is trying to get its house in order. The European banks are are trying to work with them. Could you comment on the Greece situation?
Sure. I think our viewers and listeners should just focus on the fact that the Germans are not going to tell the Greeks that they're going to work until they're 90 so that the Greeks can retire at 50. It's just not going to happen. So we'll hear a lot of headlines, we'll hear a lot of scary news, and with a new election, there's a lot of fear that they're going to start hiring a lot of government employees there. Well, cooler heads have to prevail one way or another. Perhaps Greece would get kicked out of the European Union, or perhaps they'll come to their senses. But that sort of thing can cause 100-point swings in 5 minutes in the market. Again, forget the volatility that's created by that news. Focus on what you want to own and buy on the dips.
You mentioned cooler heads prevailing. Yeah. There's a lot happening in Washington right now where there are proposals around budget. Do you want to just comment on what you kind of envision happening in that landscape?
Well, it's sort of the same theme. You're hearing the president propose a tremendous amount of additional spending. You have a Republican Senate and a Republican House. It's just not going to happen. Whether it's posturing to make the Democrats look good as the giveaway party in 2016, I don't know why he's doing that. But again, focus on the fact that historically the market has done the best when there's a Democrat in the White House and Republicans have the Senate and the House. And so that's what I'm focusing on. Also, the third year of the four-year election cycle hasn't been down in like 17 cycles. So I suspect the market won't go up too much this year, is my best guess. My other guess is that overseas stocks may catch up a little bit with the U.S., but I wouldn't pay too much attention to the posturing going on in Washington.
So you mentioned overseas, and when we think of overseas, we think of a lot going on in terms of currency wars, where different countries are evaluating their interest rates. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., there's a lot of uncertainty around interest rates. The Fed does seem to indicate that there may be an increase, but could you comment on what you see happening with regards to interest rates in the near future?
Interest rates are extremely low compared to historical standards. My quick answer on that is that eventually this 30-year downtrend in interest rates will probably be broken because rates are so low right now. And I just caution my clients and anyone else out there to talk their investment advisors before they buy long-term bonds anywhere, because I think there's tremendous risk in that right now. So let me ask you a viewer question so we can keep the show going and get to hear from our special guests. Fred Calvin of Wayne says, where do you see hiring opportunities for the near future in the business area?
Well, it's interesting. There was an article today in the Wall Street Journal that indicates that sales roles, companies are having a very difficult time filling sales roles, professional sales roles, into the sciences and technology. So if one has that acumen, they have that kind of sales savvy, and it's something that they feel they could step up to. The professional sales role is being there's a wide open opportunity in that area.
Okay, thank you. And I suspect technology will continue to have a place also in hiring in the future. So if you have a question, please, and you want to send it in, please view this quick video and we'll tell you how to do it.
You can have your questions answered on Money Matters. Please go to our website, money-matterstv.com. On our homepage, click on the banner on the right that says, Send Us Your Questions. While you're on our website, you can find information about our host and guests, as well as show notes and links about this show and past shows. Money Matters is also available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, so you can listen to Money Matters while you're on the go. That website address, again, is money, M-O-N-E-Y, dash matters, M-A-T-T-E-R-S-T-V.com.
Okay, now on to our special guest, Scott Race, President, Stuart Race, CEO of Philadelphia Retirement Alliance. Guys, thanks for being with us. How you doing?
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So your organization is called Philadelphia Retirement Alliance. Why Philadelphia, and how are you tied to the city?
Well, just to start off, this is Scott, and I'm Stu. We're tied to the city because we grew up here. It's where we live now. It's where we're raising our children. It's important to us to be part of the fabric of this great region.
Okay. So talk a little bit about that fabric from your perspective. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, we're in terms of Philadelphia Retirement Alliance and placing our mark on the city and helping, we want to really focus on working with the tough, hardworking, gritty Philadelphians who have their eyes set at some point on retirement. You guys had talked about at one point about variations in the market. We're trying to create some alternatives to make it so that some of those variations or variances that take place in the market, that for some are a little bit unsettling, we might be able to eliminate some of that to create less variance in order to have a more sort of directed approach. I know what today's gonna look like. I know what tomorrow's gonna look like because that's comfortable for me. And it's something that we think there's a lot of middle-class Americans, a lot of middle-class Philadelphians who could really take a lot of, use that to their advantage and do well with it.
So why your focus on the middle class? In other words, I'm sure if a high net worth client comes to see you, try to help them also, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. Thank you. It seems as if, in my opinion and Stuart's opinion, that the middle class often gets overlooked, that there's structures in place that might focus more on those higher net worth families, higher net worth people. But it's the people that we have focused on where they don't have do-overs, where if the market drops, they don't necessarily have 5 years or 10 years to really recover from that, or a surplus of cash to put back into the market. We think that group, that category of people, could really benefit from some of the things that we have to offer to the community, to them, as it relates to their retirement.
And with a middle-class client, I'm sure there's tremendous personal satisfaction that you've really made a difference in their life if you enable them to successfully retire. Somebody comes with $20 million, I want to make sure I have enough to eat. You may not have a lot to do with a successful outcome there, right?
It's very, very different, that's for sure. And while we've talked with and worked with those folks that have those higher account values, so to speak, you're right, there is a lot of satisfaction. I mean, we're proud to say that we're middle class people, we're among the group. So to be able to lend our expertise in an area that can be beneficial to them, it does feel good. It does make for a great day's work.
We like to think that we can help middle class people to armor plate their retirements.
Okay.
So
we're certainly seeing the savings rate going up, which is great. With, gas prices coming down, people are able to set aside a bit more. You mentioned your armor plate retirement. Could you talk, this is an investment show, could you talk a little bit more specifically as to what that looks like, what type of investment vehicles, maybe you could describe that program.
Sure. The concept of armor plating retirement has to do with protection. And it's our position that the best way to create those protections in a retirement portfolio is through the use of vehicles that have no variance and are of a lower risk circumstance.
So what would those vehicles be?
I mean, it really varies from one person to the next. But so we sit down, I'll give you sort of the path into the vehicle, I guess is probably the best way. Where we're going to sit down with folks, figure out what their needs are. Because obviously, we can label people as middle class, but there's a lot of differences from one middle class family to the next. And we want to sit down and put together a model that looks at what their needs are. And then when we're finished with that part to the equation, that retirement planning process equation, we're going to start with really that fixed income side that relates to that smaller variance to no variance among whatever the category of investment might be. It might be CDs, it might be insurance-based products, and then certainly adding in the idea of some Wall Street components as well. I don't necessarily think you can go without any of them. There's going to be some of that as well. What the specific stock might be, what the specific insurance-based product might be, or where the CDs come from, it's going to vary tremendously from one family to the next.
Well, I was talking a little earlier about the ups and downs of the stock market, and I'm sure that middle class people that are really worried about preserving their retirement don't like to see those wild swings in the market. How do you help them handle that?
It's a tough one. I mean, it's the emotional roller coaster of that, sure.
It is an emotional roller coaster, and you know, in a lot of ways, what we're talking to people about the idea that if you're a middle class investor, a middle class prospective retiree, you don't have a lot of wiggle room. You may not have excess capital to put into the market to shore up when things drop a bit or if there's a dip. So the idea that what you need to do is to be in more of a situation where you're protecting the downside of your portfolio, you're creating a circumstance where time becomes less of a factor. In other words, because of large dips, large downswings, it takes you a longer period of time to climb out of where you found yourself. So what we try to do is talk to people about how it's better to create circumstances with a lower variance circumstance. So we will be able to say to them, look, we know where you're today. We know where you're going to be tomorrow. We know where you're going to be 10 years from now. And for, you know, certain risk-averse people, that's the recipe for how to get to where they want to be.
And to sort of further going along that path, you know, where we can create a circumstance where there is less of those large fluctuations, because it really seems like the market, I mean, it's not this slow and steady pace anymore of the market. It's these giant swings up and down. We saw giant swings, or what I would think of as very substantial swings, even this week. And it's somewhat of a regular case. But when we can sit down and put together, as we call it, this armor-plated retirement, this idea of reducing that variance, when there are those larger swings on smaller portions of somebody's holdings, it's a lot easier to have that conversation with them because it hasn't affected their portfolio, their retirement plans, quite like it might somebody else.
So we've talked a bit during the show about volatility, about varying changes in the marketplace, and you've talked about eliminating risk, essentially. Could you talk more specifically about how you eliminate some of the uncertainty in the when it comes to investments?
Well, our concept, our fundamentals are we try to run the Philadelphia Retirement Alliance with two basic fundamentals. The first is it is not enough to get to retirement; you must get through retirement, and that seems very a very obvious type of thing. But what a lot of people don't realize is we're so caught up in accumulation that we don't realize that when retirement comes, a whole different set of circumstances may arise, particularly with regard to distributions and taxes. So that being our first fundamental, our second fundamental is that the only focus that you should have in preparing for and getting through retirement is maximizing income. Again, sounds like a relatively obvious thing, but there are so many distractions with regard to the manner in which retirees' lifestyles are portrayed that people seem to lose sight of the fact that it's the income that drives that circumstance. So
in this low interest rate environment, how do you maximize income? Talk more specifically as to what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, there's a variety of places to go to, and it is a challenge. And I agree with you about the long-term bonds. You got to be very, very careful with that, with the threatening interest rate increases. So, I mean, we're going to take a look at, you know, CD rates around the country. We're going to take a look at dividend-producing stocks. We're going to take a look at insurance-based products, whether it be life insurance components, annuity components, all of the features that could go into really reducing the idea that we could be affected by the ups and downs of the market. How that all structures and plays out from a standpoint of who gets what percentage of what, that obviously is going to be very different from family to family. But overall, we're using, I think, what are components that are out there that anybody can put their hands on. We're just using it in a different formula, a different format. One of the other pieces to it that I think is critical is really, as Stuart commented on, is the distribution of assets, how taxes affect distributions, how it affects income, and taking income from the right sources at the right time.
So if an individual comes into your office, take us down the path as to how you would work with them, how specifically you're able to help them.
Well, the first thing we do is we want to spend some time listening to them, because we want to get a very firm understanding of where they are in terms of expenses and income needs. Then it's an issue of we also need to know about circumstances so that we can plan with regard to their tax circumstances. If you're asking me about the day by day procedure, I mean obviously, there's an appointment. We're obviously going to need the background like everybody else does. We pride ourselves on being great listeners, so we want to hear the story, and then we want to create the framework.
We got a couple of minutes left. I'm sure that you're looking at the whole person and you're talking to people about maybe they'll need to get a part-time job after they quit and that sort of thing. And you probably, just as a backup or whatever. And then there's probably other issues involved, like you find out in 2008, you found out how risk-averse people really were compared to what they said they were. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, it's really one of those things where, right, it's interesting that you say that. You really learn how risk-averse people are when they're sort of on the firing line at that moment. Right. It's a scary thought. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where we want to build the plan. We want to put the plan in place. We want to make sure that it's structured so that it can be modified if necessary, so that as their accumulation leads into income, which then leads into transition as the states transfer, that they're set, that they're comfortable, they know where they're going to be tomorrow, they know what it's going to look like 3 years from now, but certainly build in some flexibility, that's for sure, to make certain that when things change, which they always do, that we're equipped to be able to handle that. Absolutely.
You got 30 seconds worth to add to that?
10 words?
Sure.
We help middle-class Americans armor plate their retirements.
Okay, well said. Well, I appreciate you guys being here. As far as I'm concerned, this is the most important part of society we've got to try to help. We've got a safety net for the people that are unfortunate and aren't able to make a lot of money, and the wealthy people are okay, but those middle class are the ones that I worry about the most. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Our show next week, we're going to have Charles McDermott of Turnkey Sales Operations, but I understand the show is going to have a lot of other segments too. We hope you'll stick with us next week. As far as we're concerned, your money matters.